This is NPR Illinois. I'm Jamie Dunn. Because Illinois is a northern state and the former home of Abraham Lincoln, it isn't typically associated with slavery. But there was slavery in Illinois for more than 100 years, even when Lincoln was serving as president. Our state's unexpected history of slavery is the subject of this week's Illinois Issues In-Depth Report. I sat down with the author of that piece, Tara McClellan McAndrew, to talk about it.
Slavery came to Illinois pretty darn early. It was while the French owned our land, and it was part of the Louisiana Territory. A French businessman named Philippe Francis Renault brought 500 slaves from the Dominican Republic to develop a mine here near where Prairie du Rocher is now in southwestern Illinois. The mine did not succeed, so after a couple decades or so, Renault sold the slaves to residents and he left.
And Illinois' slave population grew from the time it was a territory to the time after it became a state. How much did it grow and what were some of the reasons for that?
Illinois' slave population really boomed from the time that it was a territory until about the mid-1800s. In 1810, according to the federal census, and this is when we were still a territory, we became a state in 1818. In 1810, Illinois had 168 slaves. In 1845, that number was nearly 5,000. A lot of the people who first settled Illinois settled in the South and tended to be from the southern states, which were slave-owning states. Many of them, as a result, had sympathies with that attitude and often had slaves themselves. They wanted to bring their slaves here with them. As Illinois was developing, the people here, of course, wanted to continue to develop and draw new settlers. And they realized that in order to do that, they had to draw from some of the states that were southern and also own slaves, and if people didn't know if they could bring their slaves here or not, they might not want to come here. There's a very interesting writing by a man named N. Dwight Harris, and he wrote a book in the very early 1900s about slavery in Illinois. And he talked about some of the other reasons that our state was pro-slavery in its territory days and its early days as a state. So according to Harris's book, some of the other reasons that Illinois was essentially pro-slavery included settlers who were here believed that they needed slave help to settle the land. This is a really interesting next reason. They thought that having slaves here in Illinois would help disperse the slave population around the nation and thereby decrease the chance of having a slave revolt. But the last reason is my favorite, and it really involves some very creative thinking. Here's what he wrote. Quote, "Slavery here would provide the colored people with a partial escape from the servitude of the South by the possibility of a transfer to the lighter indentured servitude system of Illinois, and thereby be an inestimable blessing to blacks." Oh, the really creative thinking is just mind-boggling, but creative thinking is evident throughout our first state constitution and some of the constitutions that followed afterward. And what I mean by that is they practiced George Orwellian doublethink. I don't know if you remember the George Orwell book 1984, but they talked about the concept of doublethink, which is the process of holding two contradictory thoughts simultaneously and believing in them. Our state constitution did that, our first one, by both outlawing and allowing slavery. In order to gain statehood, Congress mandated that Illinois become a free state. But we already had French slaves that were owned by some of the residents. We had Southern settlers who wanted to keep their slaves. The framers of our first constitution had to walk a fine line. They basically stated that slavery would not be introduced into the state, but existing slaves could still remain slaves, and those who were indentured servants would have to fill out the remainders of their contracts, and that would somehow be legal under this very contradictory document.
And what were some of the stances that Illinois politicians took on slavery?
Our territorial governor, Ninian Edwards, was pro-slavery. He was from the South. He owned slaves. And so he helped interpret some of our early laws and believed that, yes, our constitution, our territorial constitution, will still let us basically have slaves. Our first governor was also pro-slavery. Our second governor was not. Our third and our fourth were pro-slavery as well. So while Illinois had leaders who were pro-slavery, of course, our laws reflected that. Our second governor, Governor Edward Coles, was an anomaly in terms of our first state leaders who were largely pro-slavery. Coles was not, even though he came from a slaveholding state and inherited slaves from his father. In fact, he brought them to Illinois, where he freed them against the law. And during his inaugural address, he called for the abolition of slavery in Illinois. He called for laws that would prevent the kidnapping of free blacks and runaway slaves in Illinois. And he also called for a constitution which would put these things into law. For his anti-slavery attitudes and efforts, Coles basically lost all political power after his term as governor ended, and he ended up leaving the state.
And then your story also touches on an abolitionist who lost his life over the cause, Elijah Lovejoy. Can you tell me just a little bit about him?
Even though Illinois was largely pro-slavery in its early decades as a state, even from the beginning, we did have people who were anti-slavery and some who were out-and-out abolitionists. And one of the more well-known ones, was a printer named Elijah Lovejoy, who lived in Alton in 1837 and printed an anti-slavery newspaper. And unfortunately, because of his stance, he lost his life. A pro-slavery mob attacked him in Alton, destroyed his printer, and killed him.
Former slaves who had escaped to the North and free blacks in Illinois still had to worry about kidnapping. Why was that?
Not only was Illinois mostly pro-slavery in its earliest decades, but some of our citizens took it a step further, and we basically had what some people call a reverse underground railroad. One of our laws basically kind of encouraged that attitude. An 1819 state law mandated that citizens interrogate blacks to determine if they were free or if they were runaway slaves. And if they were the latter, the white interrogator got money for it. I think it was $10. Some took that further, especially some folks who were fervently pro-slavery and anti-black who lived in southern Illinois. Some of those folks would actually kidnap runaway slaves and even free blacks who possibly didn't have their freedom papers with them, and they would return them to the South where they would make money from their sale. According to a relatively new book by a man named Daryl Dexter and called Bondage in Egypt, which is about slavery in Southern Illinois, some of these kidnappers were so bold that they would actually go up to the homes of free blacks and kidnap their children. His book says that black children were especially at the greatest risk of being kidnapped by slave catchers and taken back down to the South and sold back into slavery or into slavery for the first time.
Your story talks about something called the Black Codes. Can you tell me what the Black Codes were?
The Black Codes were laws that Illinois passed over its earliest decades as a state, which basically served as a way to tell all African Americans, free or runaway slaves, don't come here. Don't come here. Don't settle here. It was our unwelcome sign. As we grew older as a new state, those Black Codes only worsened and became harsher. For instance, some of the Black Codes prevented blacks from being in Illinois for more than 10 days, or they could be arrested, fined, and auctioned off. Free blacks and their children had to prove they were free by showing certificates of freedom with their county seat shortly after their arrival. Slaves or servants had to have written permission to go farther than 10 miles from their master's homestead or risk being whipped. Blacks could not gather in groups of three or more to make revelry or dance, or they could be whipped. And to add to this, blacks could not serve in the militia, could not vote, and could not testify in court. And the latter two, of course, prevented them from having any power to change their status as powerless.
How does Illinois' history of slavery compare with other northern states, with some of our neighbors?
Illinois wasn't the only northern state that had slavery, although we appear in some ways to have perhaps among the worst records of it. Indiana became a state 2 years earlier than Illinois did, and its first constitution outlawed slavery, like ours did. However, like our first constitution, Indiana's also condoned indentured servitude for a few decades. And when Illinois became a state 2 years later, we basically borrowed that part of Indiana's constitution, which outlawed slavery and yet allowed indentured servitude. According to an historian, Christopher Lehman, who studied Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, or the Upper Mississippi Valley states, he studied slavery in this region, our constitution, compared to those other states, was the only one that allowed slavery and indentured servitude. Wisconsin followed the lead of Illinois and did let slaves work in its mines, but eventually that stopped around the 1830s. What it sounds like some other northern states did was say, we're not going to allow slavery, but we're also not going to allow any blacks in our communities. And we didn't quite go that far, but we got awfully close because of our black laws.
I'm sure you talk with folks about Illinois history fairly frequently. How often do you find that people are surprised by Illinois' slave history?
I find that people are surprised when they learn that Illinois had slaves all the time. In fact, some of the historians I interviewed about slavery in Illinois, at least two of them told me that they didn't know Illinois had slaves until they were working on their undergraduate or graduate degrees in history. I think that says a lot. Your average person probably has no idea that Illinois really was a quasi-slave state. How many of us think of the home or the hometown? Springfield even had a slave auction. Abraham Lincoln's relatives, some of his relatives by marriage, who lived here, owned slaves. It's hard to believe. We're always lauded, especially in Illinois, as a free state, the home of the emancipator. But we weren't, and we weren't for a long time, from approximately 1719 until about 1863 or 1865. We had slaves. You can look at our newspapers around the state. We had ads selling slaves. We had ads for slave catcher services. It's there.
Why do you think it's important for people today to understand this part of our state's history?
Number one, just because it's the truth. We have to face the truth, no matter how ugly or unwanted. And I am not an expert on this, but I personally believe that that history, as all history does, has to affect us today. It happened. It has to have affected how we act as a community, as an estate today. There's one more thing I want to say about this. Some people think that because slavery existed in the North, it might have been a lighter version, you know, slavery light, if you will. But some of the historians that I talked to or whose books I read said that it could be, the treatments of slaves could be just as harsh as it was in the South. Just like in the South, some of them were sexually abused. Just like in the South, some of them were punished severely and whipped. One slave who tried to kill his master was sentenced to be whipped over 3 days. It wasn't necessarily slavery light. It was just slavery in the North.
You can read more about the state's slave history in this week's Illinois Issues In-Depth Report. You can find that now at our website, NPRIllinois.org.